At 9:30, so I guess we'll start the meeting. We'll do a roll call.
Director Cox?
Present.
Director Page?
I'm here.
Chair Ramirez?
Here.
Directors in remote, we have West, Limbaugh. In remote staff, we have General Manager Adnan Anaptawi. Staff present in the boardroom, we have Charlene Andron.
Okay, item number two, approve the agenda.
Good.
Fine.
Okay, so approved. Item number three, approve meeting summary for the Legal Legislation and Community Partners Committee meeting of August 19th, 2025. We're good?
Fine.
So approved. Number four, federal, state, or county representative district report.
We have CJ Porter from, Supervisor Cook's office.
Good morning.
Morning.
So just one item that I wanted to bring your attention to. So this is an item that's before the Board of Supervisors this morning. It's a construction contract with MCM Construction Incorporated for the Rock Springs Road Bridge over the Mojave River project in the unincorporated area of Apple Valley. So that's a nearly $20 million contract with MCM. Primarily, the funding for this project is made up of Federal Highway Bridge Program funds, and I think it's over $20 million of that funding. And this project is a total of, I think, $27 million is budgeted for this project. So that project is a coordinated effort between San Bernardino County and Caltrans to improve Rock Springs Road by replacing the existing two-lane low-water crossing over the Mojave River with a two-lane bridge. The new bridge will feature four-foot shoulders, a concrete barricaded sidewalk with streetlights on the south side, and drainage improvements. The project also includes channel grading, rock slope protection, asphalt paving, installing the Midwest guardrail system, which is a safety barrier commonly used along roadways to prevent vehicles from leaving the roadway, as well as striping and signage. So that's about a two-year project of construction. They are a little behind, by my estimation. So I think a year and a half ago, I think in December of 23, they said they would plan on starting construction in spring of 25, and it would end in spring of 27, considering where we're at right now with the construction contract. Probably about 2 years from now before that project's done. And I'm willing to answer any questions you have.
Question, Mike?
I think that bridge is a long time in coming.
Yeah, thanks for that update. Yeah. It's good to see that project moving ahead.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Item number five, update state advocate of issues at the state level.
Hi, everyone. Brenda with KP here. It's good to be with you here this morning. Can run through the agenda pretty quick. So on September 12th, well, really September 13th, the legislature wrapped up all of its business and sent all of the bills that they're going to send over to the governor that day. It was supposed to be the 12th, but due to a couple of late amendments getting the cap and trade reauthorization together, we pushed it. It was able to get pushed over to the 13th to approve those items. So, I mean, I guess that's something that's important and was not clear until those last final days of session was, you know, whether or not we were going to get a cap and trade reauthorization this year. We did, which is, you know, at least creates some stability for, you know, the market and the folks who, you know, depend on proceeds from that market, you know, things like the GGRF fund. So that did occur. So cap and trade will be extended until 2045. So now we're in a 30-day period that the governor has to act on all of the bills that have been sent to his desk. He has already taken a couple of actions of note to you all, and I think we'll talk about this a little bit later on, but, you know, he did sign a budget amendment that allocated portions of Proposition 4 to the relevant agencies to implement. So we'll talk about that later. But yeah, so we'll somewhat every day, but pretty much any day this over the next few weeks until October 12th, he will be, the governor will be acting on bills, and we will get reports from time to time about what actions have been taken. So, and then things get kind of quiet. Statutes take effect on January 1st for anything that gets signed this year. And then on January 5th, the legislature will reconvene for the second year of the two-year session. Any questions about kind of the upcoming dates?
Nope, no questions.
Okay. I will move on to some of the bills we've been tracking. A lot of updates from the last time we met, where we were kind of waiting to see which bills would move forward out of the suspense file in the respective houses, and, you know, which might get stopped or amended. So AB 1089, that's the Carrillo bill that adds, you know, a sort of a pressure release valve for industrial projects and commercial projects that's similar to what you can achieve for you know, residential and public works projects. That did pass, and it is on the governor's desk for his option, or for his, you know, decision of whether or not he's going to sign. So that's, you know, good news. SB 72, that's Senator Caballero's California Water Plan Modernization bill that Mojave has supported. That also did pass and is on the governor's desk. And I know CMUA is trying to get as much action as they can from supporters to try to convince the governor that this is a bill that he should absolutely sign. Then SB 454, that's Senator McNerney's bill that created basically a statutory framework for a PFAS mitigation fund, but as a reminder, there is no money for said fund. It just sort of creates a fund, and at some future date, the legislature can put money into it. but that bill also passed and is on the governor's desk. Now we're kind of moving into stuff that didn't move forward, which is some good news, I think, from our perspective. SB 601, that's the Allen water quality bill that kind of added a new water quality permitting category to try to sort of, they say it's to backfill federal retreat from the historic jurisdiction of the Clean Water Act. You know, we had, through CMUA, AQUA, and a bunch of other organizations, we've been very concerned about a lot of the provisions, had worked really hard to take out some of the most problematic parts of the bill, but, you know, there were still a lot of things that needed to get fixed for that bill to be acceptable to the water community. It got held as a two-year bill in appropriations, so it could move forward again next year, but we definitely bought some time to try to work out some of these issues and, you know, maybe even perhaps finally prevail on the argument that we don't really need to do what the bill says they want to do. you know, that was really technical, and, you know, we can talk a little bit more about what remains to be fixed and what, you know, I think, you know, folks like CMUA, AQUA, and the sanitation agencies would like to see fixed. It's definitely in the weeds, but it's all the stuff in the weeds that really makes a difference when you're trying to comply with a water quality permit and obtain some certainty in terms of, you know, what is and isn't permissible and what may or may not, you know, have you looking at penalties. So these are really important questions that need to be answered, but they're not very thrilling, I guess. So anyway, we've got more time to address that, and hopefully, you know, some more productive questions can be, or discussions can be had over the fall. And then finally, SB 445, this is a Wiener bill that came out late in the session. It originally was a transit bill that any, like, sustainable transit project would basically have a, be able to command a really short period of time for any permitting utilities to either approve or deny the application that they're asking for, and it would also require the utility to relocate incompatible, you know, lines or pipelines or what have you, you know, if they were in conflict with the transit project, and that would all be at the utility's expense. It got narrowed to just applying to California High-Speed Rail, which was a pretty significant narrowing, although I know it doesn't address all of the concerns that you all had. Luckily, that bill did stop this year. It was turned into a two-year bill also in Assembly Appropriations. We know from how the author has conducted himself around this and the stuff he's been saying that, like, this is definitely a priority for him, and not just for high-speed rail, but for all types of transit projects. So this bill didn't move forward, but this is absolutely not the last we're seeing about this kind of idea that, you know, transit should be advantaged above and beyond any other type of pre-existing utility. So stay tuned on that one. I know, you know, the associations that you're members of are tracking that one really closely as well, because this is a could create a lot of issues. But for the meantime, we don't have to worry about it. It can't move again until next year. Any questions on the bills before I move into budget?
So on the transit one, it's still going to be the responsibility of the utility to move their infrastructure if there is a high-speed rail being relocated in that location.
The answer to that question is it looks like yes, but they, in one of the changes they made when they narrowed it to high-speed rail, they basically charged the high-speed rail authority with developing regulations that would kind of outline, you know, times by which a utility might need to act and under what circumstances relocation might be required. So they definitely softened it a lot when they limited it to high-speed rail. But again, I wouldn't be surprised if something a little bit more onerous tries to poke its head back up again in the future, whether it's in this vehicle or in a different vehicle.
Okay. Any other questions? No more questions on those.
Okay. So a couple of things on the state budget. You know, over the last several months, there was an effort to place a trailer bill that would have streamlined certain approvals that the Delta Conveyance Project needs to achieve. That unfortunately did not move forward this year. So, I mean, that doesn't mean that, like, the project is still moving forward. This doesn't really have any negative impacts on the project itself, but it is unfortunate that we weren't able to, you know, refocus some of the approving agencies on the things that they really need to care about, and make sure that they act on it in a timely manner. So that was disappointing, but yeah, that didn't happen this year. On a more positive note, as I mentioned earlier, SB 105 was a budget amendment, or we sometimes call them budget bill juniors. And it allocated the first set of Prop 4 dollars to the various state agencies that implement the programs that the Prop 4 dollars are going to. I've broken it all down in the agenda in terms of, like, the categories that we became familiar with in Prop 4. So this year, this is just for this year, they're putting out a total of $1.2 billion for the water components of Prop 4. There's quite a bit. I think the biggest chunk, $231.5 million for dam safety and climate resilience local assistance programs. But, you know, there's still $183 for water quality and clean, reliable drinking water. That's a pretty expansive category. So, you know, I might recommend, you know, folks looking kind of at what the parameters were in, or we can talk about this as well, like what those subcategories are in that area. Do we have any projects, you know, that might qualify for that? And then start looking for when the State Water Board starts putting those dollars out into, you know, various grant programs. There's also $135 million that the State Water Board will dole out for water recycling and reuse. A couple of other categories that are on there for flood control and that kind of thing. So there's a pretty good outlay, I think, of funding. And it's good to see any Prop 4 dollars, because for a while this year, it looked like the legislature didn't really have an appetite to push this funding out. And it was a mystery to all of us, because it's just sitting there and the voters approved it overwhelmingly. Why would you not just start getting that money out? But luckily, they came to their senses, and we'll be seeing, you know, some of this money come out. So all of this just got signed into law, so this is authorized, and it's going to start going to those state agencies. It's probably going to take a couple of months, if not a little bit longer, for the agencies to figure out whether they have existing programs that they can plug this money into, or whether they have to go through a whole, like, rulemaking and guidance process to sort of develop a grant program for folks to apply to get this money. But anyway, good news, money is going to be coming soon from Prop 4. I think that's the end of my list.
Questions?
Good report. Very informative.
Yes, very good report. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Next on the list, item number 6, update by federal advocate of issues at the federal level.
Hi, Jean Denton here from IFS. I'm joined by our other team members, Jeanette Windham and Susan Paxton. Letitia sent her regards, but it's not going to be able to be with us today, but we're going to give you an update on what's going on back here in D.C. Obviously, the topic of the day is keeping the federal government open. A week from today, as you know, will be the end of the current fiscal year. So come October 1, something would need to be in place, a continuing resolution, because they have not finalized new FY26 bills for the upcoming fiscal year. Those are still working their way through both the House and Senate. So before they left town, both the House and Senate were scheduled to be in district work period this week, so they are not here. So before they left town last week, the House passed a continuing resolution. It was pretty clean, that just funds the government at current levels to November the 21st to give them time to work with the Senate, the House and Senate, to develop final bills for FY26. Passed by pretty much a party line vote, not surprising, 217 to 212. Unfortunately, got over to the Senate, and the Senate would require 60 votes, and the Republicans don't have that kind of majority, so it did not get through the Senate. So while we're a week out and they're not in town, there's lots of discussions on how they're going to go forward with keeping the government open. President Trump had mentioned yesterday that he was going to do a meeting with the two Democratic leaders in Congress, Mr. Jeffries, who's the minority leader in the House, and Mr. Schumer, who's the minority leader in the Senate. came out to discuss a continuing resolution and what kind of accommodation they could come to. And unfortunately, they decided today to not meet. They feel like they're too far apart on issues at hand. One of the bigger issues at hand that that the Democrats or the minority are putting forward that they want to have in a continuing resolution is it's a part of the budget reconciliation bill that passed earlier this year. There's a provision in there that would take back some of the health care credit subsidies that are in the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare bill, and that would go into effect on January 1, the end of December. So there's, you know, some consternation on, you know, do we need to address that right now? It's not going to be an issue till the end of the year. Let's just get a clean CR in place that funds the government, you know, for right now through November in hopes of getting some legislation in place for a lot of these departments going forward. So that's really the topic of the day here in Washington. Is there going to be a government shutdown next week? I think we would all say it's anybody's guess. There are some people who believe it would be, you know, to the benefit of different fractions to have that happen. But most people, calmer minds, normally come into play and fund the government when needed, in whether in a short-term fashion or a longer-term fashion. As you know, we have been operating under a long-term CR, a year-long CR, for FY, the current fiscal year. And there is a desire by most members to be able to get final bills done and not have another year-long CR. So that's why the discussion is under play to have a shorter-term one. Just to clarify a little more, too, on the appropriations front, the Senate did, before they left for their August recess, pass a minibus that was military construction, Veterans Department, Agricultural Department, and the legislative branch, funding their those respective departments. And the House, earlier in September, did come back and appoint conferees and go to formal conference on that. So there's a hope that they will be able to get at least one minibus done and some of the agencies funded here in the near term, and then continue, as we've indicated, you know, into November to finalize the other departments. So that is really the topic of the day, as I said, here in Washington is keeping the government open. And I will turn it over to, we've had some interface with the Bureau of Reclamation and got some news on that front. So I'm going to have Jeanette give you an update on that. But before we do that, I guess I would open it up. Is there any questions regarding the federal budget?
No questions at this time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jean. Good morning, everybody. We met with the Bureau of Rec Temecula office a couple weeks ago just to see the status of what is happening there. And they let us know a couple things. First of all, in the Big Beautiful Bill, there was $1 billion to enhance existing water conveyance and surface storage facilities, which were managed by the Bureau of Rec. We thought we found a little more information and determined that this will be used more for agriculture, water districts, and related infrastructure, dams, canals, et cetera. We also discussed the status of the Water Smart grants. They said that process is being reviewed currently by OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, and they believe that the grants will be rolling over and hope to have some news on that front soon. The other news around the Bureau of Rec is you may have heard that there was a nominee for the head of the Bureau of Rec, and that position was pulled at the end of last week for the commissioner. Ted Cook was the nominee. He was the general manager of the Central Arizona Project and is well known in, you know, Western water circles. There's speculation kind of on various sides as to what happened, that a couple senators didn't maybe like his nominee, and maybe he wasn't going to get through the process. But we just don't know exactly what happened. And so we're still waiting on now a new nominee for that position.
And, you know, the importance of that is obviously that, as Jeanette indicated, we talked to the folks that, you know, out in California at the Bureau of Rec. You know, they rely on the leadership back in Washington on how they're going to progress with funding and grants and their programs. And not having leadership back here really kind of hampers their ability to move forward. So that's why we continue to follow that closely to see what's going on with the leadership back here. Hopeful that they will have a new nominee coming out soon. Once again, though, you have to go through the process of going through the committee hearings and then getting through the Senate floor. So that's going to be a position that's probably likely going to be empty for the foreseeable future at this moment, which once again makes it a challenge for the folks in the different regions to execute on funding and programs.
Question.
And I know we had also been talking with team members out in out there with the agency about a trip in November, and you know hope to get maybe possibly Senate staff to you know state rep of the two senators to come and visit. Still working on that. Not looking great at this moment because these schedules are hard to coordinate. But we'll keep you posted.
Appreciate that. I think we're no questions here. Thank you for that report.
Thank you.
With that, we'll move on to item number 7, public information and monthly activity report. Charlene.
Good morning. Let me get this. All right, we've got this and. Does not look like it's sharing. Let me do this again. I apologize. Let's see. Let's try it again. Share screen. Right from beginning, and I still don't have a green box. I'm glad it's not just me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know why. Does something need to happen over on the control panel side? Yeah, that's very bizarre. So normally I would click that and share and then open the PowerPoint, but I'm still not getting that green box. And I don't know why. I'm glad it's not just me.
No worries. For those of you who are attending remotely, we're having some technical difficulties, so bear with us.
Yeah. So normally it's window.
Yeah, giving you a synonym.
Okay.
You close and reopen. File.
All right, let's see. This looks like it. Share screen. Oops, where's go to?
Are we on a web?
That I do not know.
I think so, because
that.
Charlene, try sharing the entire screen there on the right.
One more time. Yeah, I tried that.
Click the screen on the left. Click the box.
Right here.
Down.
Yep.
Yep. Then change the window.
Yep, that's what we've been doing, but we're not getting the green box.
I see it.
Oh.
Yeah, but I see it online, so it's shared.
Okay.
We'll take it then.
All right, that is not what it usually looks like. Well, after all of that, I have another rousing report for you from what the Public Information Office has done for the last month. And we'll start off with our MWA Roadshow. This is formerly called our mini tour, and we held this year's on September 10th. And we had, as you can see, quite a few people fill up the bus, and we brought them here. Tony Winkle did a presentation in the boardroom, and then we took all of the participants to our operations center. They got to tour the hydroelectric plant. They took a walk out to the Mojave River, and then we drove them up to the Silverwood Dam Outlook so that they could piece all those pieces together, that how they get their water. And we had quite a crew. We were really excited about it. And then we came back here for lunch. As always, this was a collaborative effort with multiple departments, many staff involved, including water resources and operations, and just definitely couldn't do it alone as a department. So we appreciate everybody pitching in for that. Tony Winkle was also presenting at the Natural Resources Conservation Service annual work group meeting. There were actually four of us there, so Melody's not in this picture, but there were four of us that went down and just educating them on what we do and our relationship with them. So that was done. Also last Monday, we hosted our Association of San Bernardino County Special Districts dinner. We usually host one of these per year, and this was our month. We had a football theme because the week before that was the beginning of the NFL kickoff season, and it just seemed appropriate. And tomorrow's talent fell right into that theme, giving a presentation of winning the recruitment game, preparing students for workforce entry. And as you know, we were speaking to how we fill those roles that people are retiring from. How do we get them involved in working in water? And so this was a great presentation and on theme and done really well. So that was good. We have a online class coming up on October 2nd, and we are going to teach, we have a speaker, Kathleen Radnich, is going to be teaching how to garden if you have sensory or physical limitations. So it's going to be a brand new class on ADA approach to gardening. So signups are still available for that. This is absolutely free. We have quite a group signed up so far, at least 15, 18, okay, almost 20 people signed up. So it's free. So hop on and join us, and you can find that information on our website. So we are now in Water Summit season, and normally I would bring Liz up here to talk about the program because she has put a lot of these pieces together, but I'm going to take care of it this month because I want to brag on her and the rest of the team members for the work that they have already put in on this, and we have a long way to go. So although the Water Summit is not held until February, we have two events that are serve as precursors to that event, and that is our essay contest and our problem solvers contest. And in previous years, we would choose three teams to compete in problem solvers. If we got more than three, we'd just do a random draw, and then we give them a we bring them in or we visit them, and we give them a real world water problem to solve. And they go away for about 4 to 6 weeks. They come back. They present their solution. They get judged by an independent panel of judges. Thank goodness we do not have to judge those. And then there is a winner. And all of this is documented by Joel Green and his production company, Curiosity Quest. It is put on PBS, but not only PBS, it's not just TV anymore. It is streaming. It is YouTube. It is Facebook. It's everywhere. If you look up Curiosity Quest, you will see our past several years of work for that. And the agency gets a lot of publicity from that. I still get comments on, oh, we saw you. So that was great. But this year was a little bit different. We started talking to Joel Green about the production of this last summer. And we all sat down as a team. And when we described the problem to him, he asked why it had to be limited to three schools. And we really started thinking about it and thought, you know, although I'm a fan of not reinventing the wheel, I'm also a big proponent of not always doing things the way that they've always been done, because that's the way that they've been done. So we shook it up a little bit. And the first thing we did is I want to give some kudos to Isaac. He is over there on that side of the room. He's with our administrative team, but he is also partially supportive of PIO. And he went through and got all of our school contacts organized, which is a huge project. And then Kenny started on the marketing, while Liz coordinated all of these details, scheduling the venue, registrations, communications with teachers, coming up with the criteria for this year's challenge. And it asks students to create a water conservation marketing campaign, like a toolkit that we can use to promote conservation in our desert. And we held our kickoff event that we called Hype Day last Friday, and it did not disappoint. So instead of three teams, we have 11, all of which are listed on the screen here. And this means instead of reaching 18 students and three teachers this year, we hosted 66 students at the Victor Valley College Educational Event Center last Friday. And I cannot wait to see what these students come up with. We've tasked them with taking a deep dive into conservation statistics and facts and messaging to create content to influence their peers and community to save more water. And that's a very oversimplified explanation. They have quite the task ahead of them. But we also have quite an impact that I believe that they're going to make, because they're the future of water. And just being in that room with them for the little bit that we did and broke off into sessions and listened to them start to put their ideas together, and it's just absolutely going to be phenomenal. So the impact this is going to have is really exciting, and I'm just going to put a big giant plug to anybody who can hear my voice that we need sponsors to support these students. We do three scholarships for the Problem Solvers event. Top prize is usually $3,000, and second and third is $1,000. I would love to see it 3, 2, and 1, but we do need that support. So if you have connections in the community or businesses, anything like that, organizations that would want to support this, that would be great. And we also need sponsors for our essay contest, which we are still taking applications through Monday. And we have seen some amazing things from the essay contest, too. You've got some pictures right here. Amazing students, amazing speakers. So entries due until Monday. Monday they close. So in addition to the special events and the outreach that we've been working on in PIO, PIO continues to support other departments whenever they are needed. Want to highlight Kenny's work with Water Resources. They called on him. They very quickly needed to get some information out for public noticing on the website, in the newspaper, and Kenny dove in and supported them getting that message out the way that we needed to, so that we met all of our mandates for that project. So thank you very much to Kenny for that. And let's see. Yeah, that was for urban water management plan, environmental reporting for the Ames Ritchie recharge facility, like big stuff, big stuff. All of our events and stuff are really flashy and they're fun to share, but it is also those things that might not be so visible that are so important. And Kenny just had no hesitation in answering the call to put that out very, very quickly. So thank you, Kenny. And then, speaking of Kenny, he and I will be at the California Association of Public Information Officers Leadership Summit later this week, Thursday and Friday. I'm actually going to be a featured speaker on Thursday on authentic leadership in public communications. So excited about that. And then finally, but wait, there's more. We have a lot of upcoming events. Would encourage anybody who wanted to go to the High Desert Chamber to get information. I believe Jay Obernolte is speaking. I say that, and now I'm second guessing myself, but that breakfast is on October 1st, so next Wednesday. High Desert PR Coalition, we will be sending Liz and Kenny will be going to that. I will be out of state. We have the next special districts dinner is on October 20th. It is down the hill. I believe it's in San Bernardino, and it is on a water topic. So if you're interested in more details, please let us know. We'll get that over to you. And then we've got, like I said, Leadership Summit next week. We are in the running. We've been named as a finalist. Is that the right term? A finalist for the Star Video Awards. Again, this is produced by Kenny, the videos that have been nominated for an award. And so we'll go to the Queen Mary on October 2nd and see how that turns out. And then I've already spoken about the gardening course. Liz is going to the High Desert Home Improvement Show next weekend. That is a big coordinated event with the AWAC group that we coordinate. So she'll be doing that. And then the following weekend, they will be out at Hellendale's Night Out event. So I know that was a lot. If you have any questions, we are all available. But like I said, I really wanted to give kudos to the team for putting all these moving parts together. After the season that we just got through with our anniversary and groundbreakings and all of that. So thank you. Thank you, team, very much.
Questions?
Arlene, it is helpful for me to decide if I want to go to an event to know who the speaker is. So if you could let us know.
Absolutely.
On that BMI. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I looked it up before we got here and I said it and all of a sudden I'm second guessing myself. So I will send that to you.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
I just want to just encourage you guys to keep doing what you're doing. You're out there and thank you very much for all the hard work your team puts in. I mean, everyone here, but on the outreach is so important because people still don't understand exactly what we do and what our role is. And so every time that you can just reach one more person, it just makes everyone's job easier. So thank you.
Absolutely. Our pleasure.
I second that. And as always, you guys do a phenomenal job and your team commend you for it all.
Thank you.
And with that, we'll move on to item number 8.
If I could, Chair, I just found the chamber thing, and it is Jay Obernolte.
Okay. I don't know why I was second-guessing myself. I literally just looked at it, so thank you.
It's because he was there
recently. I think so.
Public participation?
Not at this time.
General Manager's report, item 9.
Good morning. I just really briefly wanted to follow up on an update we got from Brenda Bass on the Delta Conveyance trailer bill language. So if you recall, I probably spoke about this a few months back where there was an effort to include in the budget a bill that would essentially streamline a lot of the challenges associated with Delta Conveyance project permitting and eventually construction. This is areas like land acquisition, providing the Department of Water Resources, making it easier to acquire land for the project, some streamlining of the water rights hearing and protests. this has been a really big challenge for major projects in the state, is the ability for tactics used by opponents to sort of slow down projects. We're seeing that play out a lot, and so a lot of clarity around the water rights process would have been cleaned up with this trailer bill language. There's also been some challenges in terms of validation, that the state has been trying to validate the project as part of the state water project, which is an obvious statement to say, kind of practically speaking, it's obviously part of the state water project, but because language doesn't explicitly include it in there, doesn't clarify that, the state goes through a validation process to make sure they can bond for the project, and that's also been a delay, would have cleaned that up. And also the conflation of the perfection of a water right for the state water project, right? The state water project has been in effect, I think deliveries started late 60s, early 70s, when most of the project, the major components of the project got started. And they've been operating that project, of course, to balance water resources across California. And there's still challenges being made on whether or not, or what amount the state water project can divert in any given year, sort of its water right. That's been conflated with the Delta Conveyance Project water right hearing. So that's been a challenge, and this bill language, of course, would have cleaned that up too. So it's a super unfortunate result. It didn't go to a vote. What I hear, though, on the street is that there was a significant amount of education that was done as part of this work. Right, and the lobbying, making aware, or just providing awareness of the project to our state reps, has gone a long way. Some have said that if this had actually gone to a vote, it would have passed. So it was on purpose that it wouldn't hit a vote by the opponents. Unfortunate again, but I guess the education that we got out of this work, I think, is a win for California. I think it was amazing to see the lack of understanding of the state water project, how water resources are balanced across the state. Of course, we know that there are many other pressing things on the news, in the news cycle these days. Just making and closing some education and understanding gaps is a big win. Hopefully we see something like this make its rounds so that we can clear some of the hurdles associated with the project. But I just wanted to provide a little bit of extra context. It wasn't a total loss because a lot of education was done. And that concludes my report.
Any questions? Thank you, Dan, for that report. Item number 10, comments, discussion, items for next or future agenda?
Nothing
at this time. And with that, adjourned.
How's your granddaughter doing?